ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Bhagavad Gita, one of the important verses that probably everybody in the room knows. We're going to be entering into that, like the message of that verse through Srimad Bhagavatam more deeply. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvataha tatvadeham punar janma naiti mameti sarjuna. Do you know the verse? No? Do you know the verse? You can say it on your own? No? Go ahead. Try again. Start over again.
Janma karma cha me divyam
evam yo veti tatvataha
tatva
deham punar janma
naiti
itti together becomes naiti. Na iti. Naiti. Mam iti. Sorjuna. So in that verse, Krishna is saying that for one who, or if one knows that transcendental, divyam, transcendental nature of Krishna's activities and his appearance, so we're dealing with his appearance, that's one of his activities, will not take birth again in this material world. So our project this morning is to work on not taking birth again in this material world. But actually, it's not our project. Our project is to understand Krishna. The byproduct of that is that we won't take birth again in the material world. And the transcendental nature of Krishna cannot be separated from the transcendental nature of Krishna's devotees. We can say it the other way around. The transcendental nature of Krishna's devotees cannot be separated from the transcendental nature of Krishna. Because the nature of Krishna's devotees is that Krishna is everything for them. And because Krishna is everything for them, as far as Krishna is concerned, they're everything for him. As he says to Durvas Muni in Srimad Bhagavatam, my devotees have only me in their heart, and I have only them in my heart. Actually, he says it the other way around. I have only them in my heart because they have only me in their heart. They cannot act apart from me, and therefore I cannot act apart from them. There's unity in diversity by very strong Krishna consciousness, very strong devotion unto Lord Krishna. Very strong devotion unto Lord Krishna. Inseparable from Krishna, his devotees. So, the section that we're discussing, Canto 3, Chapter 3, it's the overall topic is Krishna's departure, which is very interesting, that Krishna's departure is in Canto 3, before they even talk about Krishna's pastimes. But it's not just circumstantial, although it is circumstantial. The circumstance is that Vidura, in Canto 1, left home, left the royal palace, upon the insult of Duryodhana. So he left, and then he was on pilgrimage, and he met Maitreya, but before he met Maitreya, he met Uddhava, who then said, best you go to Maitreya. Out of cultural deference that Maitreya, he's elder. He's a brahmana. He is my superior. You go to him. But before doing that, Uddhava was met, and Uddhava was asked by Vidura to speak about Krishna. So in speaking about Krishna, and in speaking about Krishna, the most prominent thing that's moving his heart is that Krishna has just left, so he's speaking about Krishna's departure. And in speaking about Krishna's departure, he's disclosing the transcendental nature of Krishna's activity in a way that, you know, only Uddhava can do. Or, you know, with the depth of realization of Krishna and the transcendental nature of his departure. So along with Krishna's departure, we heard yesterday that Uddhava was recounting the pastimes of Krishna up to the point of the Kurukshetra battle was finished, and one of the reasons for Krishna's appearance in this world, Vinashayacha Duskritam, had been established, and his Dharma Sangsthapanartaya had been established. He spoke Bhagavad Gita already. So what was remaining? He was protecting his devotees, Pritranaya Sadhunam, but Krishna was considering, after the Kurukshetra battle, before the installation of Maharaj Yudhisthira as the emperor, he was considering, I have appeared in this world to alleviate the burden of the earth at the request of Mother Earth, of the abundance of demoniac kings who are giving burden to the earth. Now that is done. But the task is not done, because there are members of the Yadu dynasty that remain. And they have so many divisions of soldiers, that's also a burden upon the earth. There's different descriptions by our acharyas as to Krishna's contemplation, you know, what the nature of the unfinished work was. So, as I expressed yesterday, our acharyas elucidate further, and so I'm going to read a little bit from commentary by our acharyas going into the nature of Krishna's contemplation, because his contemplation is another leela. Krishna's contemplation is fact. Like, you know, in one place in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna states, in my opinion, now we can say, in my opinion, and, you know, take it or leave it, it's my opinion. When Krishna says, it's my opinion, it's his opinion, for example, that of all the systems of yoga, the best of all is bhakti. What's that verse from Bhagavad Gita? Yogi nama visarvesham bhajate nantaratmanam chatavan bhajate yoha mataha. It's my opinion. I consider mataha, and it's just like a very polite, gentle way of saying it's a fact. So Krishna's contemplation becomes fact. So he's contemplating, my pastime, the purpose of my advent has been fulfilled. What's left? I'm going to be returning. Is there something in between my purpose of adventing and my returning to the spiritual world, or continuing on to the next universe where my Bhoma Leela will continue? And yes, there is something. That something is, there's the members of the Yadu dynasty. Because before his advent, are you with me? before Krishna's advent, what happened? The demigods, headed by Lord Brahma and Mother Earth, went to the shore of the Milk Ocean and petitioned Lord Vishnu, "Help! Please relieve the burden of the earth." So what did Krishna say? Or Lord Vishnu say? "I will come. Tell the demigods, Lord Brahma, tell the demigods I will come. But before I come," what did he say? "The demigods should take birth on earth first to assist me in my pastimes. Then I will come. Take birth in the Yadu dynasty, Andaka and Bhoja dynasties. Please give them that instruction." So they fulfilled that instruction, but now what? Krishna's returning. So they also have to return. It's incomplete. It's like, we need prasadam prepared for the Sunday feast. Can you go cook the feast? Okay, I'll go cook the feast. And you cook the feast and leave the kitchen a mess. No good. The job isn't finished until the kitchen is made clean. Right? It's not like, oh, I did the cooking. Someone else is supposed to do the cleaning. You didn't say, can you clean the kitchen? You said, can you cook the feast? But part of cooking is cleaning. That's Prabhupada's training. When Prabhupada trained the devotees to cook, it was before you begin to cook, you make everything spotless, and as you're cooking, you're keeping everything spotless. And so when you're done, everything's spotless. It's not like before you cook, somebody else makes it clean, you come in and make a mess, and then you leave, and then somebody else makes it clean. No. That's not brahminical. That's lazy. And Brahmins aren't lazy. It's task isn't completed. That's one of so many examples. So Krishna's not lazy. He understood something remains to be done. So here's several opinions by our Vaishnava Acharyas, and we'll start with Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, who has remarked in this connection that although ordinary people might think that the Lord has now removed the burden of the earth by killing the demons, reestablishing Dharma and so on, Lord Sri Krishna himself could detect that there was further danger from the irreligious activities of his own family members, who were acting improperly. Krishna's own family members. Here's how that happens. It is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that a just king will refuse to punish his own enemy if his enemy is innocent, but will punish his own son if his son actually deserves punishment. Thus, although in the eyes of the world the members of the Lord's own dynasty are always worshipable, Lord Krishna, listen carefully, Lord Krishna detected that by their intimate association with him, some members of the Yadu dynasty had become indifferent to his will. Familiarity. I mean, if it can happen with the Yadu dynasty and Krishna, then what to speak of us? Better beware of familiarity. We very much need, we require sadhu sangha. Okay, now we have the opportunity for sadhu sangha. But beware of becoming familiar. Because what happens when familiarity comes? Contempt. With that very thing that's necessary for your deliverance, you become contemptuous of? Oh, big problem. So what did Krishna decide with the Yadu dynasty? That they're great devotees. They got Krishna's association, and they're associating with him, and they became contemptuous of his will? It happened. So what did Krishna do? They were removed from that position of close association with him. He didn't like get mad and punish them or smack them or yell at them or, you know. He just relieved them of that intimacy, of his association. But we don't want to be outside of sadhu sangha or Vaishnav sangha. We don't want that to happen. But it can happen. So we have to be very careful. Since such whimsical members of the Yadu dynasty could act freely, being relatives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they would surely cause great misfortune for the world. And foolish persons would take such whimsical behavior to be the will of Krishna. Got it? Like, you know, aside from their problem A comes problem B. They're not accepting Krishna's will, as they should, with proper regard. But now, going off in another direction, they've got another idea besides Krishna's idea, and they're marching around like, this is Krishna's idea. And ordinary people think, oh, this is Krishna's idea, because they're the intimate associates of Krishna. And then we can go to problem C and problem D, and you know, it just geometrically expands. So the root of everything is our proper regard for Krishna. And to have proper regard for Krishna, you start going out in concentric circles. But it's not okay to have disregard for sadhus and Vaishnavas. Then, you know, the whole of your connection with Krishna is crushed, trampled. That's not good. You grow a garden and then invite an elephant into your garden? No good. Don't do that. That's the lesson that's described by our acharyas. Thus, the Lord, whose desires are inconceivable, not only invincible, but they're inconceivable. But we're trying to conceive of the inconceivable through the assistance of our great acharyas, which we are very... Thus the Lord, whose desires are inconceivable, began to consider the need to annihilate the indifferent, contemptuous members of the Yadu dynasty. So then, Sridhar Swami says something similar. He says then in the verse it speaks of the Lord accomplishing this by his arms, plural. So he indicates he did it with his forearm form. Admonishing. Vinashaya Chaduskritam. When Krishna kills demons in Vrindavan, it's through his Vishnu feature. Because within Krishna is everything. He's the sum total of all manifestations of Godhead. And similarly, when Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita, it's that same. It's not, in fact, it's not Govinda. It's Sri Bhagavanu Vacha, but it's not Krishna in Vrindavan. It's not that mood. He's not giving that lesson in Vrindavan. He's giving on the Kurukshetra battlefield. So, Sridhar Swami asked the question. The original form of Krishna is, as Govinda, is two-armed. But it was by the plenary portion of the four-armed Narayana that the Lord killed all the demons on earth and ultimately removed the burdensome members of his own family. Question. If certain members of the Yadu family had become indifferent to the will of the Lord, why didn't they oppose the Lord's plan to remove them from the earth? They've already got this, you know, attitude problem. Krishna had some will. Why didn't they just, like, we're not going along with your plan? And the answer is, you may not go along with Krishna's plan. Krishna's plan prevails. It is impossible for anyone, even the Lord's own family members, to understand his will completely. And we can get Bhishma Dev instructs Yudhisthira, don't try to understand the plan of the Lord. You can't. Great rishis, great sages, demigods, etc. Try and try and try, and they can't understand. So don't try to understand the will of the Lord. Although we do have this idea that, you know, something happens, what is Krishna's intention? What does Krishna want us to understand from this? You know, something like the will of the Lord. So here, we can't understand it fully, but some indication, you know, one of the generic things about difficulties that arise in our life, what is it that Krishna wants? What are we to understand? Well, one of them is, this is not a place meant for enjoyment. Everything is temporary. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam, by design. Read the label carefully. This is a place of suffering. Prabhupada would give the example of cigarette packages. What does it say on the side of cigarette packages? You'd smoke this thing, it will kill you. Buyer beware, it's called. So, take birth. We celebrate people's birthdays. Oh, congratulations, it's your birthday. But, you know, on the little tag it says, buyer beware. This body is a place of suffering. We say it every time we take prasadam. Sharira avidya jal. This body is a place of suffering. And the senses are a network of paths to death. Congratulations, you've gotten the place of suffering and the path to death. Happy birthday. No problema. Mucho problema. This material body. So trying to understand Krishna's will completely is not possible. But Krishna has his will, and his will is invincible, as well as inconceivable. Here's Srila Prabhupada commenting from Canto 1, Chapter 5, Text 33. What's Chapter 5 of Canto 1? It's an explanation of Vyasadeva's work of dividing the Vedas. He was thinking of the welfare of all. And being Trikalagya, he could see into the future Kali Yuga. And what did he see? Oh my God, look at that. Kali Yuga is horrific. I want to do something to serve all the persons who are victims of this age of Kali. I'm a literary person. I'll take the Vedas and put them in writing because people have such bad memories. They can't even remember what day it is or who they are. Memories are so short. And I'll make it easily approachable by breaking them into four and then writing explanations of those Vedas and so on. Srila Prabhupada comments as follows on the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty. Quote, the setting of the sun does not mean the end of the sun. It means that the sun is out of our sight. Similarly, the end of the mission of the Lord on a particular planet or universe only means that he is out of our sight. The end of the Yadu dynasty also does not mean that it is annihilated. It disappears along with the Lord out of our sight. Okay. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Like we're getting in this, imagine sitting in a circle. There's Jiva Goswami. There's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. There's Srila Prabhupada. There's Bhakti Siddhanta. There's our great acharyas, and we're getting to hear them discuss this subject matter. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that no one within the universe was capable of even insulting the members of the Yadu dynasty what to speak of defeating or killing them. How was it possible for them to be... Krishna saw the necessity for them to be removed. Kali Yuga is coming. The descendants of the Yadu dynasty will be invincible like the Yadu dynasty. And as Kali Yuga has its influence, big problem. Even now, in my presence, due to familiarity, they're disregarding my will. These personalities need to be removed from earth before I depart. The reason given here by the words, the reason is given here by the words, but samshayasya. The members of the Yadu dynasty had fully taken shelter of Krishna, and therefore they were always under the personal protection of the Lord. It is stated, Mare Krishna Rake Ke, Rake Krishna Mare Ke. If Krishna protects someone, no one can kill him, and if Krishna wants to kill someone, no one can save him. Krishna had originally requested all of his associates, along with the demigods, to appear on the earth to assist him in his pastimes. Now his pastimes are coming to an end on this particular planet and would be transferred to another planet in another universe. Krishna wanted to remove all of his associates from the earth so that in his absence they would not constitute a burden. Since the powerful Yadu dynasty, being the Lord's personal family and army, could not possibly be defeated by anyone, Krishna arranged an internal quarrel. Just as the wind in a bamboo forest sometimes rubs the bamboos together and creates a fire that consumes the entire forest. It's described here that expertly, because whatever Krishna does is very expertly done, he arranged for the demigods to come and join him. You're going to hear this in the third canto section. The demigods went to Prabhas, and his eternal associates, they remained in Dwarka. Krishna had, you know, had a divide, a plan for both. Because we know demigods, they're great devotees. But, you know, they sometimes, you know, they mess up. Like Indra, even the king of heaven. He does the Indra program from time to time, not always. He's a great devotee. So here's verse 25 and 26. So what we discussed yesterday was the brahmanas made a curse because Sambha insulted the brahmanas, and understanding the puffed up nature of young boys that are members of the Yadu dynasty, this iron mace club that was in under his cloth like it was a pregnancy, that club will be the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. So that curse took place. A few months passed, and then, bewildered by Krishna, the descendants of Vrishni, Bhoja, and Andaka, who were incarnations of demigods, went to Prabhas, while those who were eternal devotees of the Lord did not leave, but remained in Dwarka. Text 26. After arriving there, all of them took bath, and with the water of this place of pilgrimage, they offered their respects to the forefathers, demigods, and great sages, and thus satisfied them. They gave cows to the brahmanas in royal charity. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Amongst the devotees of the Lord, there are several divisions, mainly Nityasiddhas and Sadhanasiddhas. The Nityasiddha devotees never fall down to the region of the material atmosphere, even though they sometimes come onto the material plane to execute the mission of the Lord. The sadhana, siddha devotees, are chosen from the conditioned souls. Let's hope that we get chosen, huh? The sadhana siddha devotees, out of the sadhana devotees, there are mixed and pure devotees. The mixed devotees are sometimes enthusiastic about fruitive activities. That's mixed. And are habituated to philosophical speculation. The pure devotees are free from these mixtures and are completely absorbed in the service of the Lord regardless of how and where they are situated. Pure devotees of the Lord are not enthusiastic to put aside their service to the Lord in order to go visit holy places of pilgrimage. So that means we shouldn't go to holy places of pilgrimage. What else Prabhupada has to say? Sri Narottama Das Thakur, a great devotee of the Lord in modern times, has sung like this. Quote, "To visit holy places of pilgrimage is another bewilderment of the mind because devotional service to the Lord at any place is the last word of spiritual perfection." Unquote. Vrindavan. I want to go to Vrindavan. But what to do? What's Prabhupada's message here? Next. "Four pure devotees of the Lord who are completely satisfied with transcendental loving service of the Lord, there is hardly any necessity to visit the various places of pilgrimage. But those who are not so advanced, it's some of us, have the prescribed duty of visiting pilgrimage sites and regularly performing the rituals. The part of the princely order of the Yadu dynasty who went to Prabhas performed all duties to be done in a place of pilgrimage and offered their pious actions to their forefathers and others." Karmakanda rituals. Final paragraph. "As a rule, every human being is indebted to God, the demigods, great sages, and other living entities, people in general, forefathers, etc., for various contributions received for them, from them. Thus, everyone is obliged to repay the debt of gratitude. The Yadus, who went to the Prabhas pilgrimage site, performed their duties by distributing land, gold, and well-nourished cows in royal charity, as described in the following verses." Which is very interesting because these are demigods offering unto the demigods. It's very delicate because we certainly don't want to speak something diminishing or offensive towards these great personalities, the members of the Yadu dynasty, but following the indication of Srila Prabhupada's purport, these are mixed devotees, indicated by the fact that, you know, they had become puffed up by their position, they had become indifferent to Krishna's will, at least some of them, and they're attracted to fruitive activities and the benefits to be derived from fruitive activities. We heard previously from Uddhava that what's the position, just as one who is a devotee who understands the nature of involvement with Prakriti, that it's encumbering, it's entangling, it binds one, like, you know, third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when we engage in activity, there's reaction to that. It binds the performer. But knowing that implication in karma, someone who is devoted to the path of devotion, bhakti unto the personality of Godhead, are they going to be interested in worldly activity and the objects connected to worldly activity? They may act in relation to those things as an offering unto Krishna, but they're not interested in the activity itself nor the objects of this world. They're interested in Krishna. And by that interest in Krishna, there's detachment, appropriate detachment from worldly activity or the objects of worldly involvement. Yet at the same time, very vigorously, enthusiastically be engaged in Krishna's service in the midst of all those things. It's a science. It's a transcendental science that requires attachment to Krishna. Without attachment to Krishna, one isn't going to understand the science. Hear it again and again and again. If there's not an attachment to Krishna in the heart, it's theory. It doesn't stick. In fact, it bounces. Boom. In one ear and out the other ear. It doesn't stick. It doesn't resonate. It doesn't enter the heart. Through devotional service alone can the message of detached work, working as obliged, but detached from the fruits of work. It's karma yoga is going to be incomplete even, what to speak of. So without the completeness of attachment to Krishna through the regulations and the fruits of those regulations of bhakti. So here we have the Yadu dynasty members that they've got a heart problem. And not a medical one, but a spiritual one. So Krishna's doing the needful. So they're going to the place of pilgrimage. Elsewhere it's described that the occasion was a festival. And so they went to a holy place to observe the festival, and Prabhasa is such a place. They took their holy bath and making these various offerings, with some expectation of result from those various offerings. Dutifully, but also with some expectation. Because they're mixed. So what's the position of pure devotion? Is that an interest in mixed? There may even be, you know, the availability of something. What's the nice verse from First Canto, Chapter 2, Bhagavatam? Quickly go through this. Dharmasya hyapavargasya nartotayopakalpate. So the first part is, dharma should never be performed for the purpose of economic betterment. Let me get something from by doing this dharma. Should never be performed for that reason, but there should be the reason of hi apavargasya, ultimate liberation. Okay, say it again in a different language. We should do our devotional service not because we're going to get something from doing devotional service. Like, whatever it might be that one might want, you know, you have your, whatever your private wish list is, and, you know, it's empty. Other than, let me simply be engaged in service to Krishna. Okay. At least in theory, okay. I know I've got these other desires going on, but okay, accept the principle. Now I'm doing my devotional service, and look at this. Something comes. Some respect. Some honor. Some position. Some something. Some prosperity. Oh, I wasn't doing it for that purpose, but it just came. So now what do you do? Nartasya dharmaikantasya kamo labhaya hi smritaha. And even that which comes of its own accord, even without the intention of its coming, it comes. Never should that be engaged in sense gratification. Kamo labhaya hi smritaha. Whatever comes should never be engaged in sense gratification. If it's not sense gratification, what's it engaged in? Service to Krishna. Service to Krishna. So a pure devotee, back to the message that Prabhupada wants us to receive from this verse, these two verses. A mixed devotee may wish to go to a place of pilgrimage because, well, let's make a little list. A, sinful reactions are eradicated. B, I'll accumulate some piety. See, I may get some blessings from some saintly persons there, or mercy from the Dham, and thus the obstacles for my fulfillment of material desire may be removed. It's a nice program. I like, let's go to the pilgrimage place. The position that Narottama Das Thakur is taking is one should not have such hankering based on the understanding that wherever devotional service is performed, that place is a place of pilgrimage. Say it the other way. If you don't have that realization that through devotional service, that place has become like a holy place, go to the holy place, and you're going to continue with your material desire. So now, you know, relieve your doubt or anxiety. Should I stop going to the holy Dham? Is that what Prabhupada is telling us? What did Prabhupada himself do? He went to the holy Dham. And when his death notice was there, he went to Vrindavan. Vrindavan is my home. And Mayapur is my preaching place, and Bombay is my office. Vrindavan is my home, and home is where the heart is, and so Vrindavan is my home. And he went to Vrindavan. Regularly he went to Vrindavan. So he is not telling us, don't go to Vrindavan. Narottam Das Thakur is also, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to go to Vrindavan. Lord Chaitanya sent the Goswamis to Vrindavan. It's like, don't go to Vrindavan. That's not the message. But understand what the purpose of Vrindavan is. What the purpose of devotional service to Krishna is. And when you go to the holy Dham, it's not... So, the principle... There's this saying, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. You've heard that one before? So, if you're on the top rung of a ladder, if you slip, you have farther to fall than if you're on the first rung or the second rung. If you're on the top rung, be very careful. Be careful anyway, but be especially careful when you're engaged in the top rung of the yoga ladder, because it's a long fall down. And so there's a safety net. It's like, you know, in the circus they sometimes have people walk. Now it's not even just walk a tightrope, they ride a bicycle across a tightrope. They do all kinds of crazy things. And they do it without a net. I'm sure they do when they're practicing, they have a net, because if they fall, the net catches and they don't go crashing to the ground. The Varnashram duties are like a net, a safety net. It works the other way. It helps give support to the principles of Shuddha Bhakti, one who is accustomed to proper prescribed duty. So it's therefore, Daivi Varnashram is something that Prabhupada recommended. But it's a puzzle. How does Daivi Varnashram fit in with Shuddha Bhakti? Well, I can tell you that there isn't consensus within the Hare Krishna movement with the answer to that question. But I can also tell you, or share with you, that there's a growing interest during our Mayapur seminars that take place just before the Mayapur Navadvip Mandal Parikrama, which takes place before the Gaur Purnima. There was something like 4 or 5 part sessions on Varnashram with different speakers speaking on that subject. It was organized by Bhakti Raghava Swami, but there were multiple speakers. Revati Raman Prabhu, the PhD from Oxford, he was a speaker, and Devamrita Prabhu from, now is one of the Navan project, he was one of the speakers. So it's all recorded, and the topic is Varnashram. And Shivaram Swami made a presentation to the entire GBC on this topic. He was very wise and experienced. He didn't call it a talk on Varnashram because everyone kind of shrivels up and, you know, hides under the rug. Like, oh, we're not going to get to the bottom. So he didn't call it Varnashram topic. It was a topic saying, who's a member of ISKCON? And it was a nice presentation. And, you know, where it led us to was, you know, we recognize Prabhupada's teachings, and part of Prabhupada's teachings is, here comes the jack out of the box. It's, you know, we're Varnashram. We regulate ourselves according to our natures. Or we're regulated by the codes of Dharma and by our spiritual master according to our nature. Anyway, it's a safety net. It's not the essence. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Ramananda Roy, there's that verse from Vishnu Puran where I get what? Varnashram Charavata. So I can't remember. One who performs his prescribed duties according to Varna and Ashram for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, this is the goal of life. And Lord Chaitanya, that's external. Mm-hmm. So when speaking of Varnashram duties, while it's external, it doesn't mean we throw it in the garbage. Just like, you know, Sarvadharmam Paridyajan, that's also external, and Yad Karoshi Yad Asnasi, and that's also... We don't throw them away. What's the essence? The essence is our loving relationship with Krishna that's restored through Bhagavad Dharma, hearing and chanting about Krishna. Throwing away tendencies for speculation or gaining something in the form of fruitive results from devotional service. We discard that, but we engage in hearing and chanting for the sake of our relationship with Krishna. Just as we're trying to do right now, trying to understand Krishna through the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. Gradually, through that purification, letting go of tendencies to speculate and desires for fruitive activity, coming to Shuddha Bhakti. So one who has come to that stage of Shuddha Bhakti, I'm going to end here. One who has come to that stage of Shuddha Bhakti, where that person is doing devotional service, that's a sacred place. So it's not yearning for something that's a sacred place through a contaminated consciousness, but through the process of bhakti itself. And then one can enter into the sacred place, the place of pilgrimage, Vrindavan, or whatever the places of pilgrimage that one may go, and receive the full spiritual benefit. Prabhupada established the temple in Vrindavan so that the devotees could go to Vrindavan. He built a guest house so people can stay in Vrindavan as they're visiting Vrindavan. But Sanatan didn't want people to go to Vrindavan, us or the people in general. The whole idea of building this temple of Vedic planetarium in Mayapur is to get people to Mayapur, to the Holy Dham, and get purification and get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And it's also, you know, to get appreciation for the brilliance of the Vedas, even in understanding material things like cosmology. And, you know, it's fascinating and intriguing and totally brilliant. So scholarly people will go and check out. Let's check this out. And they'll get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Pilgrims will go, oh, let's go see this wonderful planetarium, like tourism. And they'll get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Prabhupada wanted to give the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Krishna to the world. But he also wants, through these messages in the Bhagavatam, for us to continue to strive for Shuddha Bhakti and know very clearly what it is. We're receiving nice instructions, purports from Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, so I'll end there. Well, what is, you know, ask somebody. Prabhupada wanted Varnashram established in ISKCON. How are we to do it? What does it look like? Good luck. To get a consensus on that one. There's different opinions on what it is and how to do it. It's not unclear that Prabhupada wanted it. What it is and how to do it. Yes?
When we speak, heart views only as much as care about whether that is important.
Really? What's your doubt about that?
Like, for example, the story...
No, King Chittaketu was.
Yeah, he had really undergo so much of...
Well, you got your opinion, but what was his opinion? He told Indra, do it! Come on, don't be timid. You're a Kshatriya. You've got Lord Vishnu's favor. You've got this thunderbolt right there, right there. Go ahead. Because I'll then be released from this curse and I'll be with my Lord. Indra, please, hurry up.
He actually makes a prayer saying that, you know, I'm just like a wood odd once. So how will a person feel happy if he feels like he's a wooden doll?
It's not... What he meant, I'll calm down. What he meant by saying that is, I move by the will of the Lord. Prabhupada spoke like that in his arrival in the Boston Harbor. My dear Lord, if you want me to dance, make me dance. Make me dance. Make me dance as you like. It's another way of saying, I am simply a wooden doll. Not, you know, like, I have no feelings. I'm a dull stone. No. Nobody's home. I'm simply an instrument of your will. That's the meaning. And if you want this, it's this. And if you want that, it's that. I'm very happy to be your instrument, whatever it is that you want. Happy. That's me. Yes.
Maharaj, about the Kurukshetra war, Krishna joined Pandavas and Krishna's army, the dynasty, army basically.
His army. He had army. Within the Yadu dynasty, Krishna had his army.
They joined Duryodhan.
Yeah.
They were on the Duryodhan side. So what happened to them during the war?
This is a college... I call this a college question. By Krishna's will, anything can happen. Yes?
Yes, as you mentioned that Krishna's... How they got content again, it was Krishna...
They were demigods who had taken birth, and demigods are mixed. They're great. They were mixed. You know any great people that are mixed? I do. You know, there's some great people that are mixed. You know, in the history of the world, great people. Could you, before you just interrupt, let me just find out if she's okay with... Okay? Well, not exactly Krishna's will, Krishna's sanction. He invited them. We're having a party. Come on to the party. So they came to the party. But they came with, you know, not purified hearts. And Krishna knew that. But he was giving his association nonetheless to elevate them and purify them in the course of that intimate association. What our acharyas are saying, they became indifferent to his will. That's a problem. It's a problem for them, and it's a problem for others. It's like A and B. So, is that Krishna's will, that we have indifference towards him? Distinct is the case of Grandfather Bhishma. Pure devotee. Looks like he had, you know, a different opinion than Krishna's will. Not so. He fought against Krishna's dearmost friend. He was prepared to kill Arjuna. Bad. But Krishna knew, Bhishma knew what Krishna would do. Krishna would protect Arjuna. He wanted to show, this is Krishna. Krishna made me break my promise, and I never break my promise. I'm going to make Krishna break his promise. But show, he'll protect his devotee above his own word. That's Krishna. That's my Lord. But who can make Krishna do that? I can. It was devotion. It wasn't like, you know, those who had become indifferent to Krishna's will. Although to an outsider may look, hey, that's the same kind of a program. Krishna's dear devotee is Arjuna. You're doing something against Arjuna. You're going against Krishna's will. But his consciousness was not that. His consciousness was to glorify Krishna. Although apparently in opposition to Krishna. It's deep. It's, you know, it's subtle and deep. Why did Grandfather Bhishma, a pure devotee, not protect Draupadi? One word. The whole thing gets stopped. Because he's Bhishma. He didn't say anything. What's Krishna's will? Let Draupadi become insulted? No way. Krishna showed what his will is. Why did he not have Bhishma, say something? Draupadi even asked him. And he said nothing. He remained silent. That's Krishna's will. Not, you know, contrary to Krishna's will. For two reasons. One, Krishna wanted to show, whoever you are, how, up to Grandfather Bhishma, if you don't protect women, finished. But the other was so that Bhishma's desire to serve Krishna in a chivalrous mood by being in opposition to him could be fulfilled. Because now he's on the other side and there's a battle. So he could fight with Krishna, or at least with the Pandavas. And then Krishna had to be on the other side. Chivalrous rasa. The secondary rasa, and his principal rasa is servitude. It's deep. But, you know, so the superficial examination isn't going to suffice. Okay? Yes?
Sorry, practicing bhakti yoga?
Yeah.
And so, I mean,
are you practicing bhakti yoga?
I am, yeah.
Are you a pure devotee?
No.
Okay. Does that answer your question?
But I mean...
Yeah, but... But they're the Adi dynasty, they're not me. Right? That's coming?
No. So the bhakti, is there bhakti yoga can be applied in like practical situations, and they, let's say they, didn't they have any feeling that they were kind of going out of line or...
Hey, when you're going out of line, what happens? You got all this rationalization and covered consciousness that's going on. It makes you think, I'm doing just fine. Of course, not you, it's everybody else that's like that, but you know, you can see it in other people. It's, you know, the application is diverse, but the principle is standard. Turn your attention away from light. What do you see? Shadow. Darkness. So, you know, there's mixed devotion and there's pure devotion. That's what we heard. Okay? Yes? Yes. One is where the duties are done for the satisfaction of Vishnu. That's Daivi Varnashram. And Varnashram is doing of duties. And now what's the motivation? Well, if it's minus Vishnu, it's either one of two things. Material elevation or striving for moksha. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Satisfy the personality of Godhead. Bhagavad Dharma is what that verse that Lord Chaitanya accepts. Stanes tatakshutikat. So whatever your position is, stay in that position and engage in hearing and chanting about the personality of Godhead without expectation of fruitive gain from doing so, or mental speculation about the subject matter, just extending yourself to your relationship, trying to establish your relationship with Krishna through that medium of hearing and chanting. That's Bhagavad Dharma. That's what Srimad Bhagavatam is. There is mention of Varnashram. It doesn't disappear. The social structure doesn't disappear. The emphasis is upon the relationship with Krishna. It's, you know, the full ripened fruit of the Vedic tree. The leaves and branches are still there, but it's the ripened fruit. Okay? Yeah.
Question to the Sinashrama is not so clear in our society.
Yes.
So what we are doing is Bhagavad Dharma, right?
We're striving for Bhagavad Dharma, that's right. Now, what is the role of Varnashram within the society that's striving for Bhagavad Dharma? Listen to the lectures and, you know, hear the different points of view on that subject. I'm not going to try to summarize it in, you know, a minute or two. It's a vast, profound subject matter upon which there's not consensus at present. Yes?
Whereas if I'm going off track in the field.
Oh, they'll tell you. You won't even have to ask them, they'll tell you. They're very kind. Say it slower.
So if I am at least certain humility or willingness to listen, if I am totally, I am completely right mood, then...
That's correct. Yeah.
So what's the 16-8 for that?
Just go on the internet, everyone will find all about, you know, people that don't listen to anybody and... I'm not advising that. I'm just saying, you know, that's the forum for such people. They don't listen to anybody, but they know everything. To be more serious, let's say, you know, if one becomes so far inebriated with their, you know, their sense of I'm right. In such situations, after attempts to help others helping oneself or another person who is in that situation, it's then a matter between that person and Krishna. Their relationship with Krishna is in peril. Though Krishna is very expert. He may send some representative or he may directly arrange something. And sometimes it's not, you know, sudden. Sometimes it's gradual. Sometimes it's sudden. Yes.
Prabhu.
Yes.
Ultimate. And in general, what is the activities that I'm doing? Because there are different levels of enlightenment for each and every. Can we categorize them and formulate to go to there, but in steps?
Excellent question. You need a spiritual master. Because, have you read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita? Okay. As you're going along reading Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, or do you have Vedabase? Vedabase is an electronic version of...
Yeah.
So, do a word search. under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. See how many times it appears in Bhagavad Gita. Mucho. Many, many, many times. Or prior to that, because we're on different levels, right? Under the guidance of those who are qualified Vaishnavas. They'll help you understand how to apply, to discern the teachings and to apply the teachings appropriate for your level, spiritual progress. There's a book written by Sanatan Goswami. You know who is Sanatan Goswami? One of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan under Lord Chaitanya, followers of Lord Chaitanya. So he wrote one book, Hari Bhakti Vilas. Hari Bhakti Vilas is a how-to manual, how to perform devotional service. And all the, you know, A to Z, rituals, deity worship, sanskaras, everything, details and details and details and details and details, how Vaishnavas, followers of Lord Chaitanya, under the authority of scripture, do everything. Everything. A to Z. At the end, the last verse, Sanatana Goswami says the same thing that Prabhupada says many times in Bhagavad Gita. All of this must be applied under the expert and capable guidance of a bona fide spiritual master who knows the nature of the individual. Because something may apply to one individual and not apply to another individual, depending upon their stage of progress and their spiritual evolution. Or it should be applied this way for this person and that way for that person. The application, I'm repeating myself for the fourth time here, is under proper guidance. The flip side, without proper guidance, one won't know. What will one do? One will speculate. And, you know, then the buzzer starts to sound and the red light starts to flash. It's, you know, you violated a basic tenet of how to receive from Krishna. It's through the agency of representatives of Krishna. That's the system. We may like the system. We may not like the system. That's Krishna's system. And one who accepts Krishna's system can receive the mercy of Krishna in appropriate for one's spiritual position to go further and go further and go further. Specific for one's, you know, stage or their trajectory on the path toward Krishna, towards the goal. It's not optional, it's essential. Even to understand what's the goal, what to speak, how to get there, the steps to take to get there. Generally speaking, in a covered condition, we don't have a clear idea of what is the goal. We don't even have a clear idea of who can help guide us to that goal. You know, we're covered. So the spark is the sincere desire. From our side, the eligibility is a sincere desire. And when that sincere desire is there, Krishna will send. There was some discussion last night about, you know, how do we know what the path is? The path might be right under our nose. We just don't see it because our desire isn't strong enough to see it. Our desire is stronger on the side of, I've got my ideas of how I want to enjoy life, independent of Krishna. But, you know, still some other desire that says I want to be with Krishna. Well, we've got this mixed thing going on. So we may not see. So where a special effort needs to go is in the sincerity department, to really want the real deal. They just have to become teenagers again and say, you know, I want the real deal. I don't want this phony stuff. I want the real deal. And have a, you know, sincere desire like that. Very, you know, you say altruistic or the genuine, and Krishna will send. You want something else, Krishna will send that also. Yes.
The other, how can I dovetail? Master is the only way that I cannot dovetail myself.
Well, let's simplify it and say guidance. Guidance from a qualified devotee. Guidance. So, how to is to make those things which are material, spiritual. What does that mean? It means to see them in relation to Krishna and to act in that consciousness. So here's a very simple definition of spiritual and material. We'll start with material. Material is forgetfulness of Krishna. Spiritual is seeing things in relation to Krishna. It's like here's a house. And spiritual consciousness is, this is Krishna's house. On the deed it may say, you know, my name. But I know it's Krishna's house. I may be the manager of Krishna's property, but it's Krishna's property. And because it's Krishna's property, it's meant to be used in service to Krishna and not otherwise. I'll give another example. This body. That's another house. So, what's this body? It's a temple. When people ask, what's that mark on your forehead? I like telling Prabhupada's answer. It means the body is a temple of God. So that's like nice sounding. What does that mean? So I often, well, if they pause, say, what that means is, just like a place of worship, a church, a temple, synagogue, whatever the place of worship is, the mandir. When you go into that place of worship, God is there and you're very reverential. You're very careful. You leave your shoes outside. You don't take dirty things into the temple because it's a temple. So similarly, we're very careful what goes into this body and what comes out of the body because it's a temple of God. That's like, you know, the practical part of the body is a temple of God. Because inside there's a form of God. And inside over there and there and there and there there's a form of... So I have to be respectful to those various temples of God too. I'll treat others, the bodies of others, as the temple of God. Not, I'm attracted as an object of enjoyment for the opposite sex, for example. Or an opportunity to exploit somebody to get something I want. You know, it's like... That's a no-no because the body is a temple of God. So, that's a theory. Now, how do we take that theory and make it enter our heart? We need association of those that have that in their heart, and through that association, that understanding enters our heart. So it starts with sincerity. I want to leave behind that material consciousness stuff and go into this other space. That's a realization. Your question was how to see things and, you know, interact with things that are worldly while I'm on the path of devotion. Spiritualize them. Like the body, or like the house, or etc. In relation to Krishna, therefore, it's Krishna's property to be used in Krishna's service and not otherwise. Krishna's example in Bhagavad Gita is the tortoise. Can extend his limbs or withdraw his limbs. So there's opportunity for service, here I am. No service, where'd the limbs go? The senses are meant for service to Krishna. And service to Krishna, there they are. No service to Krishna. And spiritualizing our senses. And by spiritualizing, they become purified. And purified, then they can act spiritually. You can see Krishna, hear Krishna, smell Krishna, taste Krishna. You can experience Krishna through spiritualized senses. And then the objects of the senses. They're meant for Krishna's service. And otherwise, transform this material world into Vaikuntha. Prabhupada was asked by one reporter, once, Swamiji, your movement is growing so rapidly. Someday the whole world may become Krishna conscious. What will that be like? Prabhupada's answer was, don't worry, it won't happen. But if it were to happen, this place would become Vaikuntha. So, things that are material, forgetfulness of Krishna, my remembrance of Krishna, it acts spiritually. You know, microphone, it's just matter. But it can have, be imbued with the capacity to be used in a spiritual way, or the kartals, or Mridanga, or the deity, or japa beads, or, you know, this body can become spiritualized by service to Krishna. Our thoughts, our words, our feelings, our relationships, our family members, everything that was previously material has become spiritualized by proper application of the practice of bhakti. Then it acts spiritually. It's not binding. If anyone that hasn't raised a question that would like to, yes?
Thank you, Maharaj, for the wonderful. You were mentioning about familiarity. So, how can I hold myself from becoming familiar?
The short answer is respect. That's the antidote. You can be very close, but always maintain respect. When respect starts to wane, the other comes in. I mean, that, there's no delay either. It's like the sun sets and darkness comes. Respect. So, respect for what? It's respect for the disposition of that soul to serve Krishna. You know, it's just like yourself and your husband. Before marriage, you didn't know so many things about each other. Now you know so many things about each other because of proximity. But, you know, so you could start finding fault with your husband and he with you because he knows what all your shortcomings are. But, you know, besides the shortcomings, there's this devotion to Krishna. And see that with respect. And then in service to one another, you can assist one another to overcome those shortcomings. Because of respect. And it doesn't deteriorate into this familiarity thing. Oh, look at your shortcoming. Well, you know, look at your shortcoming. And what do you expect when you do this? Because of that, you know, get your act together, will you? And then I'll be a better devotee. Anyway, etc. You know how it goes. So, respect. And a clear idea of respect for what? A spiritual conception of not just a dutiful one, because that leaks. It's got lots of holes. It doesn't endure. The nice idea that, you know, definitely has its limits. So a spiritual conception of what is respect and why. That's enduring. Then you can build a strong relationship that's very close, that doesn't break down into familiarity. You get the last question.
Maharaj, similar type of question. What happened to gopis after Krishna? We were not able to...
That's a similar question.
Similar in the sense like a college type question.
Oh.
So, the gopis were not even tolerate a single moment of separation from Krishna. And they were searching Krishna when Krishna left Vrindavan. They were searching Krishna everywhere in the Vrindavan,
yeah,
in that mood.
Yeah.
But when they heard about Krishna left the planet Earth, then what they did after that? What happened to them? Gopis.
I've never heard a description of what they did. It's a nice question. What makes sense is Krishna took them with him. Details I never heard described. Have you?
No.
Description goes to the residents of Dwarka. Well, here's, you know, this is, without being explicit, it's intuitive. when Krishna appeared, they appeared. Because Krishna appears with his whole spiritual atmosphere and his eternal associates. And when Krishna goes to another place, they go with him. They're part of his eternal associates. They go with him. The detail of that lila, I'm not familiar with, if it is described. Besides the Yadu dynasty, Bhagavatam describes what happens to the Pandavas. They, in their self-same body, they go to Krishna. Because they're part of his entourage and his eternal lila, his Boma lila, and so they go with him. And Draupadi and Kunti, they also go. So, certainly the gopis went with Krishna.
Vrajvasis, they are not descendants from that particular...
Vrajavasis means the residents of Vraja. You're Seattle Vasis. And they're Vrajavasis. Alright? Pretty much? Srila Prabhupada. We're supposed to break...